died down in Cedarville. Somebody shot him, or he shot himself. He made dulcimers and sold them all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And he done a pretty decent job on them. But now Sarah's got a nephew, a sister. Bertha, her son, I seen the one that he made. Boy, I'm telling you, it was a piece of art. Now he really done a good job on it.
Now, where does he live?
I don't know where he lives, whether he lives in Ohio or where he lives. Maybe in Arizona. Bertha lives in Arizona. Uh-huh. And I don't know, the boy may live out there too. They have a Jack Blake family reunion every so often, and they all get together. That's how I come to know about this. That is up at the Silver Lake, Silver Lake Park. When I lived up there, and it wasn't too far for me to go, and I run over. And I saw that there dulcimer that he made. And I couldn't believe that he made it, because I never knew him doing anything.
Do you remember the first one of those things you ever saw?
Yeah. My granddad had it, Henry Blake. He brought it and come to our house with it. That's the first one that I ever saw. And he was trying to learn to play it, and he'd get that thing and he'd up and down on it. He could play a tune if you knew what the song was. You didn't know what he was playing, but yeah, it was, did a lot of honing done on it.
Did he make his dulcimer too? Or?
No, he didn't make them. He didn't make them.
Would that have been when you were pretty young?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just a kid?
Yeah.
At home?
Yep. Yeah, we lived up here in 1918. When they had that flu was around, that epidemic of flu, so many people died. When that was when my mother died. I was 8 years old, and I was the oldest of four children, oldest of five children. The baby, he died about a year afterwards, and we stayed up here. And my dad and three boys and one girl. And every now and then, Jack Blake and Lori or Hovers or some of them, they'd bring their music and come over, and maybe they'd stay all night, or maybe they'd come over and play 2 or 3 hours and talk to us and everything, and they'd go back home. Mm-hmm. It was comfort to us, you know, for somebody to come in from that way and play for us. But then it finally got so that they quit it, and then we took it up ourselves. And
where'd you get your first banjo?
I don't know. I traded and got it through. Some of the neighbor boys, the head was cut out of it, split. Mm-hmm. And like I said, finances back then was tight. Couldn't afford to buy anything hardly, only just the bare necessities of life. And part of that old head was still on there. one day I decided I'd put a head in it. I took and went and got a flour sack and split it open and laid that rim down and made a marker around it and cut it out and put it on there, and I'd tighten the brackets down and I'd pat it a little bit, you know, and see how. After a while I thought, well, I got that ought to be about tight enough. And I put strings on it, tightened it up, the bridge went right down through it. And then I think the next head was put in it. We put it in out of a groundhog hide. Killed an old groundhog and dressed the hide. It didn't give it much of a sound. It was too dead. Somebody told us later, it said we skinned a cat and took a cat and made a head for it. It said it'd been good, but they didn't tell us that then. I suppose it's afraid we killed a tomcat.
Did you ever see anybody play an old banjo without any frets on it?
No.
Have you ever heard of that?
No. No, I've never heard that. Never heard that one. I suppose if you could, violin don't have no frets on. I don't see why you couldn't play.
Some of the real old banjos didn't have frets. That's all. Did anybody? You told me that your brother made a fiddle.
Yeah. He might tell you what he made it out of. Made it with a double bit of Dax and a paring knife.
Does he still have it?
No, I wish I had. The last time I heard anything about it, I wanted to buy it. I was going to try to get a hold of it. Sumpter boy over here at Heater had it the last time I heard anything about it. And he was crazy for letting go of that. He ought to have held on to it. And he was made out of soft wood, had to be. He took a double bit of axe and filed that thing just as sharp as it could be. And where you know the bow in there, hollow underneath. You take that axe and you cut that out in there. Lee got it the way he wanted it. And then for the fine cutting on it, why, he used a paring knife. And I asked this boy one time if he'd sell it to me. He said, nah, I wouldn't sell it to you at all. Now he's dead now. I don't know who he got it. I'm going to see his sister. I see her once in a while. I'm going to see her and find out if she knows anything about it. Because if I can get it to be bought, I'm going to buy it.
Get it back in the family.
Get it back in the family, yeah.
Did you know of any other people around the country making fiddles? Do you know of anybody?
No.
There's some Blakes who lived over Orlando way. Are you kin to them too?
Some of them I am and some of them not.
There's a Hillary Blake I saw.
Hillary. No, I don't think I'm any related to that.
And he made a fiddle.
Did he?
Yeah. Or he made a couple of them. Pretty good.
Well, if you'd see a fiddle that my brother makes, you'd swear that he didn't make it.
Yeah. How many has he made?
I think he's made two.
Yeah.
And one of them, I forget how many different pieces of wood he had in it. And
Maynard, did they ever have any shows come through Braxton County? Did like any of the big players like Uncle Dave Macon or any of those kind of people ever come through this country playing that you know of?
I can't think of any right offhand. Mm-hmm. Really here in Braxton County now. There might have been some. I know there was people from here around here. We went, some of us went to Summersville one night to see a radio group.
Who was that?
Huh?
Do you know who it was?
I'm not certain, but that seems to me like it was Roy Cuff and there's different characters on it, but I don't remember who they were. That's been 60 years ago, and I can't remember back that far.
I think Melvin said he used to play up in around Burnsville at the movie theater.
Yeah.
For the nut.
I never was around there. See, my dad, he's like I say, he's chip off the old block. He didn't think that boys 16 and 18 years old should be out at night, you know, going to places, movie theaters and stuff like that. And we wasn't allowed to go unless he could go with us. Mm-hmm. And it was very seldom that he could go with us, so we missed it an awful lot. So, but nowadays, you see him out 8 and 10 years old running in gangs, and nothing thought about it. But it was different with us. Mm-hmm. When I was 18 years old, I don't remember now where it was, I went. I asked him if I could go. He told me that, let him know. I asked him 3 or 4 days ahead of time. I said, well, let me know. He said, night is going to be in. He said, if so I can't, I'll go with you. If I can't, he said, I don't know whether you can go or not. But he broke down and let me go. And boy, I felt like a king. That 18 years old and could trust. Didn't want to trust us out. And at that time, there wasn't much crime and things were going on. There wasn't 10% of it, much as what they are now. And they don't think much about it now. You never hear a parent tell a kid you can't go no place. It's not the place for him to go or anything. But I know how I broke the ice or going on my own. Back here on the hill is a church up there, they call it Pleasant Hill. And they was having a revival meeting up there. And there was a girl that lived up there on Cedar Creek that me and her talked a little once in a while. She asked me one night, she said, you're going to go to church tonight? And I said, I don't know whether Daddy let me go or not. She said, let you go. She said, well, you're 18 years old, past 18. She said, what in the world is he going to let go of you? I said, I don't know. Well, I got to thinking about that. I just thought to myself, it is time that I get out on my own. Now, I could go to the neighbors and hoe corn, and working the hay, everything, but just as quick as I got my supper, I had to come back home. And I told him, I said, I'm going to Fort Neill to church Saturday night. He's belonged to the Audra fellas. He'd go to lodge on Saturday night. And he said, now, he said, you better not go up there. He said, there's a bunch of wild lads goes up there and liable to get you into trouble. I said, then I'll go get me into any trouble if I don't want to get into it. So, but anyway, I made up my mind as I was going. And so he went to lodge and he said, now I want you boys to be here now when I get back. I said, well, I may be, I may not. I said, whichever one gets back first. So I went. And the time that I got back, well, he was home and was in bed. And when I went in, he reared up in the bed and he said, well, he said, you minded me very well tonight, didn't you? And I said, you didn't tell me straight out I couldn't go. I said, you just told me I better not go. Well, he said, it always was enough before. And I said, I've a notion, he said, yep, use my belt on me. Now I said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, I'm past 18 years old. And I said, if you want to get up out of the bed and whip me for the belt for going to church, that was the only place I went. I said, then I was in a crowd, church crowd all the time till we got home. And I said, if you want to whip me for going to church, just get up and whip me. He said, boy, he said, you think you're smart, don't you? And that was my breaking away from home. Always after that, I'd want to go someplace. I'd say, Dad, I'm a going so and so. He'd say, now, I used a little judgment. A lot of times I'd want to go to a square dance. And he'd say, now, it gets awful rough around them square dances, and I never did. And he'd say, you better not go. He said, you might not do anything. Or, but he said, somebody else is liable to do something and accuse you of it. And I'd study the situation over. And a lot of times I didn't go because I knew he was giving me good advice. But as long as I thought it was anything within reason, I went. And that's how I broke away from them.
What was the roughest you ever saw at a square dance?
Well, let's see, the roughest I ever saw at a square dance was the last one I was to. It was at Hobart's home.
What happened?
Well, let's see. Dewey Singleton hit Pat Singleton along the cheekbone there. I know he must have had a pair of steel necks on his hand. And he just cut that down to do there and just peeled right back to his ear. Well, Tom Singleton, the boy that Dewey hit, him and Dewey's brother, they was into it. And Tom stabbed him about six or seven times in the back. Tom Singleton cut Dewey Singleton's muscle of his arm right through that little just gapped open about like that there. Well, I don't know why there was two or three fist fights going on in the yard at the same time. I don't know who all was into it. And when it started to leave, why, they taken the boys to get them taken care of by the doctor. Well, they told Pat and Tom, his son and father, to leave that the dance was over. And they still wanted to hang around and argue. And I seen a fella that night unbutton his shirt and reach in, and he pulled a gun out far enough that I could see. He had a pearl handle 32 revolver. And he would have used it too, but after one of Sarah's brothers had it, Jack asked Tom to leave, and he said he wasn't ready to leave. And Sarah's brother just said, "Yeah," Tom said, "You're ready to leave." He said, "You're going to have to go now." And he just reached in, and that was all he said, just reached in his shirt, got that gun in his hand. He said, "Yeah," Tom said, "You're ready to leave." And as he went out at the gate to leave, somebody threw a rock at him and missed him and just stripped the palings, the tops of three or four of the palings off, just broke them off right close to his head. Well, as they went down taking these fellas to the doctor, somebody on the truck had a gun. I don't know who it was, up in the back of the truck. And somebody shot that one, was shooting down at him, shot him in the leg there, and the bullet went down to about his shoe top and come out.
And somebody on the truck shot somebody on the ground?
Yeah, there's just two that they told to leave, you know. He said, after they got him going, he's waiting for fellow to come with his truck to take him to the doctor. Well, they got them started out of there, that boy and his dad. And as they went by, they was walking. And somebody on there started shooting at them, and they were walking. He shot the boy right down in the calf of the leg, and the bullet went down and out right above his ankle. And that is enough for me. I said, no more.
You remember who was playing music that night?
Well, I imagine it, my brother and Uncle Jack. I imagine they was the ones that was playing music. Because of all the ones that I can think of now that would have been there that could have, that would have played. And I thought everybody was having a good time and everything. And after a while, he said, somebody come in and said, there's a fight outside. Said, somebody's getting cut all to pieces. And I looked around to see where my brother was. He's like a heel catchy now. There's no question about it. If you get, he won't start a fight. He's not fussy. And anytime you mess with him, you just well figure on getting cut before the heel catchy. And I just thought, uh-oh, it's him. Somebody will get cut, or maybe somebody cut him. And I went out, and this was a grudge between these two brothers and the boy and his father. And
that was a...
All of them were singles.
They're all singles.
All of them were singles. And it was a grudge. Been going on for years. And Dewey Singleton and Basil, they were Sid's boys. They was pretty mouthy. And they come there and they, Tom Singleton, that is the older of the bunch. Now, I don't know what he carried, but he carried a blackjack or something he called Old Major. And one of the boys walked up and asked me, said, "You got old Major here tonight?" He said, "Well, why didn't you try to find out?" And Basil took a swing at him, and that's what started it. It was just a grudge. And
You don't know what started the grudge?
No. It's been going on for years.
Feud.
I think I know what it was, but I'd rather not express myself on it.
They were from the same family, though.
No,
related?
The two brothers, Basil and Joey Singleton, they were of the same family, and Tom and Pat Singleton, they were another family. And I don't think it was any related. I don't think it was at all. But then these younger boys, Basil and Dewey, they was out of a family that was, they was pretty fussy. They couldn't hardly get out and back in hardly without getting into a fuss with somebody.
Did you ever hear any of the old, your people or any of the old people around talk about the Civil War much?
I never heard nobody talk about it, only my granddad. He was just a boy then. Now, if I'm not mistaken, it seems to me like that his dad was in the Civil War. But anyway, they said they got word there's a bunch of soldiers are coming, and they had a trap. He had a trap door in the house. He'd raise it up and go down in underneath the floor, and the old woman would kick a rug over it. And said they come. He was down under there. And they come in the house stomping around and a little bit shivering back, whispered down a crack to him down under there. And said it's a wonder they hadn't noticed that he was down there, but they didn't bother him if they did. But I've heard Granddad tell about coming and his dad being up above the house. And they shot him, I think it hit him in the mouth or someplace, and tore a big chunk of flesh off. The snow was on. And he said, after they went on, they supposedly thought they'd killed him. After they went on, he went up. He was just a small boy then. There was blood and it's in the big chunk of face and his old gray beard just, and I've had him get mad and throw a fit, boy. He said, I'd like to have been old enough and I had a gun like they've got today. He said, I'd have showed them something. Irvin Bragg. He was in the war too. And he telling about he got lost from somewhere or another, got lost from his crew. Said he was walking along and he saw a man sitting over a little way. Said he was sitting there and said he was going through all kinds of maneuvers, motions and everything, and said he thought he was motioning for him to come over. He went over. Said, oh, and them old big mini balls, they called him, it hit him right between the eyes. And he's just sitting there reading back again a tree, and his brains was running out of that place. He's reaching up there and getting them and eating them. If they'd run out, he'd pull them out and eat them. And he said, that man died, didn't he, Irv? He called him Irv. Said, that man died, didn't he? Why? He said, Lord, no. He said, he lived and made a man. told about being out and lost. He said he's nearly starved to death, and he come to a farmhouse, and there's an old woman baking pies. Said she had 7 apple pies baked, and said he asked her if he could have a pie. She said, yeah, take them all if you want them. And customary, they'd come in, wanted anything, they'd take it whether you wanted to give it to them or not. They'd take it. And said, yeah, take them all. And he said, I took all 7 of them. And he said, I was tramped on. He said, I eat all 7 of them pies. He said, I think that helped me till I got standing. He said, that must have been in Virginia someplace. He said, that helped me, eating 7 pies. And I know what them old farm pies was like. Great big pies, lots of filling in them.